The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Welcome into the latest edition of ESPN FC. I'm Dan Thomas, joined in the studio today by Craig Burley. We also welcome to the programme Jurgen Klinsmann, Frank LaBeouf and Nader Manure. Of course, only one place to start today's show, and that's in Paris. We saw the Champions League semi-final between PSG and Manchester City. Another brilliant game. PSG completely dominating the first half. 1-0 up, deservedly, thanks to a great header from Marquinhos. Manchester City, a completely different side, though, in the second half. Kevin De Bruyne and Riyad Mahrez giving them a 2-1 lead going into the second leg in Manchester next week. Craig, let's start with you and just talk about the fact that if half-time I told you that City were going to win this game 2-1, it would be a big stretch because PSG were completely dominant.
Well, at half-time, if you'd have said to me City were going to play in the manner in which they did in the second half, I would have been surprised. That's how big a turnaround it was, and credit to them for that. That was the City in the second half that we know can perform. But there's so much to talk about for us and all the guys. A just quick summary here. You know, yeah, they looked a little tentative. Man City in the first half, a little wary. But a lot of that was down to what PSG did. PSG, they had the press that City normally have. That flustered City. That pushed City back to the walls, the edge of their own box. When PSG had it, Verratti was coming in off that left side. When they didn't have it, he was dropping back. They were making a 4-4-2. They were making it difficult. And City looked flustered. But then that completely swung 360. They got further up the field in the second half, Man City. Bernardo Silva pushed up. De Bruyne pushed up. They got the press on. And they passed it so much better from a position of, say, 20 or 30 yards higher up the field. So the starting position in the second half was so much better, and their passing in the second half was so much crisper. It was excellent.
Why was there such a difference between that City in the first half and the second half, Jurgen?
Well, I think, you know, the difference comes from the second half, that PSG was not able anymore to maintain the same intensity and the same rhythm. And what they did really, really well in the first half with Mbappé and Neymar staying up front, you know, they occupying the whole back line of City first half. I mean, De Maria played, I think, tactically a brilliant game in the first half against Cancelo. Cancelo is one of their key pieces there in the Man City team over the last couple of months. He was not even existent there. And then they dropped, as Craig said, they dropped into a 4-4-2 defensively with Verratti then going often on the left side. So, but they had the physical edge as well. And then obviously they scored with a nice header from Marquinhos. And it looked all perfect for Paris Saint-Germain going into halftime. What changed then was that they second half, they dropped back. And even Mbappé and Neymar dropped back and tried to get the balls in their own half. In that moment, you really literally invite Man City to take over. And that's what they did. Manchester City took over the entire second half, dominated it, kept the ball and created chance after chance, even if both goals were kind of a little bit lucky. I mean, the first one was a cross from De Bruyne. The second goal goes through the wall, which is, you know, shouldn't even happen to you if you coach an under-19 team, that somebody shoots through the wall. That's kind of a little bit the sad side of it. But they deserved it. They deserved the win because they dominated the second half. De Bruyne kind of was all over the place. Gundogan got better and better into a rhythm. So two completely half times, but obviously it goes 90 minutes and Man City is now in a driver's seat.
Was PSG tired, Frank?
Yes, PSG was tired the second half. And I totally agree with what Jurgen just explained. For me, it was a so-so Manchester City. They were so-so consistently, where Paris Saint-Germain has been absolutely perfect the first half and very poor the second half. They lost their talent, they lost psychologically, they lost physically, and they lost tactically in the second half. We saw nothing anymore in the second half. And it's why City, of course, got more aggressive But they kept on doing what they were trying to do in the first half that they couldn't do because of the press, of the way Paris Saint-Germain was pressing them. And that's the only explanation for me. And again, Jürgen is right when he said this. Manchester City scored two goals, which the first one was a cross and the second one was a bad wall. But at the end of the day, I'm more disappointed by Paris Saint-Germain than I'm impressed by Manchester City. I saw Manchester City really suffering the first half. Really, really, like I never seen them suffering this season. Because Paris Saint-Germain was perfect. And it's more because of Paris Saint-Germain being very tired by the fact that we didn't see Neymar anymore and Mbappé. And because the defense dropped, that City found maybe a breath, and find a solution and won that game.
Manchester City showed a lot of character in that second half, Nathan.
Yeah, they certainly did. I think, as everyone's alluded to there, they were very poor in the first half, and a lot of that was to do with the way PSG were playing. But one thing which I've found with that team after watching them for the past few months, I think you look at their away record, and I think they've won 19 of the last 21 games away from home. So to see them play badly is very, very rare. And it made me think in some ways there was going to be a reaction. As big a reaction as came today, I wasn't expecting that. But I thought they were going to be better in the second half. And I think going in at halftime 1-0 down, you know, for City, that might have been seen as some type of positive because, as everyone said, they were very much on the back foot. But they have a manager who can tweak things, who can try and calm people down because he's been there before. And I think he did that. And the performance we saw from City was, in the second half, was more of what we expected. But the other side of that coin is that PSG, as everyone said there, really did look quite weak and quite poor in that moment, which is crazy because most people, when they're 1-0 up at home, especially in the semi-final, you expect them to be able to carry on and just kick on from there. But I think it's credit to City, but, you know, it's the cliche, the tie, we're only halfway through this tie and anything could happen in the second leg. But for City to have won their two quarter-final legs and to have won the first away leg in the semi-final, you know, that surely is going to fill them with confidence for next week.
There's two ways of looking at the performances of both sides. Were City flustered in the first half because of the scenario of the semi-final, or because all of a sudden these guys are turned into bad players? I don't think so. Maybe the pressure was a little bit to do with it, but I think for me, more of it was to do with how PSG pressed the ball early on, and they really asked questions. And I don't think I've seen a Man City side as often for 40 minutes as deep as they were.
Yeah.
Right? Because normally City are so high that there's lots of space in behind. But they were pinned back for long periods. Contrast to that, the boys were talking about how poor PSG were in the second half, and they were. But again, a lot of that comes down to the opponents. If you look at, and I don't have the graphics or the stats, obviously, but I'd imagine looking at it with the naked eye that almost every Man City player's starting position in the second half was much higher up the field. And so, therefore, they pressed it higher, they won the ball back higher, and City and PSG, when they did give it away, and that was a lot in the second half, they gave it away nearer to their own goal. And that allowed Rodri and Gundogan in particular, and Gundogan just grew into the game as it went on.
Yeah.
That allowed them to pick all the second balls up, start the passing, that got De Bruyne into the game a little bit more, that got Mahrez, it got Foden into the game a little bit more. And that really allowed City to pin PSG in, and that then got Mbappe frustrated, it got Neymar frustrated. And to be quite honest with you, I personally thought PSG's attitude in the second half was atrocious. We had lack of discipline, we had players throwing their arms in the air, we had a red card challenge, and it was a red card all day from Gay, Idrissa Gay. It was a terrible challenge. We then had the despicable sight of at least six or seven Paris Saint-Germain players surrounding Felix Birks, trying to get Kevin De Bruyne sent off.
Yeah.
When it was never a sending off challenge, it was a yellow card, it was a bad challenge, it was a stamp on the foot, but it was a yellow. But again, we saw the Neymars and the Mbappes and the Marquinhos all surrounding the referee. I thought that typified their second half. City rose above that, were absolutely brilliant for the second half, 45 minutes, but trust me, I mean, the pendulum has swung, but There is too much in this PSG side to just say that that's it, done. Too much.
On that point, Frank, how much were they responsible for their own downfall in that second half?
For me, they're completely responsible, and they are responsible for what happened. The behaviour, the way they were thinking the game, the way they were, you know, working together, or individually, I would say, the second half, comparing to what they did in the first half. They're responsible for the results. They're responsible for the first half because how much they played and so well, and how poor they were in the second half. And I, you know, we're not going to debate, you know, if City raised their level in the second half or if it's Paris Saint-Germain who dropped dramatically their level in the second half. But I really feel that, you know, Manchester City kept being consistent, a little bit more than average, but they did what they had to do because they have the talent for that, and they became more aggressive. But in Paris Saint-Germain's side, for me, there is two phases. The first one, the first half, is perfect. Nothing to compare, nothing to blame the player off. They did what they had to do. And suddenly you see nothing. You see nothing because not too many people make the effort, so therefore the defense has to drop. Then you get crazy, that you get anxious, that you get nervous, and it happens what happened, and you have that result.
Jürgen, what could have Mauricio Pochettino done in that second half to counter what he was seeing play out?
Well, I think from a coaching perspective, it's really frustrating when you see them in the second half starting the first five, seven, 8 minutes, and they're not doing any more what they did brilliantly in the first half. You know, all you can do as a coach out there is to scream at your players and move them back up the field again. You know, tell Mbappe and Neymar to step it up, to close the spaces and to play that pressure game on Man City. That is so, so important. If you want to survive against Man City, you got to step on their toes. You got to win your one-against-one battles. You got to be physical, but controlled physical. So you got to be really disciplined. And they were not disciplined anymore in the second half. So it's really a lack of focus, a lack of concentration, especially, you know, the two goals, you know, not doing anything with that cross from De Bruyne. Somebody has to step in and has to clear that ball, obviously, because Navas is just kind of the last little piece on the line. He cannot do anything. And then, you know, to get a free kick through your wall is just, it's just something that shouldn't happen on that level, not in the semifinal of a Champions League match. But you obviously, as a manager out there, you know, all you can do is to correct things, to scream out there and get them back in the game. But they lost the momentum from the first minute on in the second half. They lost that momentum. They lost their physical presence that they had so well organized in the first half. And they paid the price for it.
Nathan, from a professional perspective,
Dan,
how embarrassing...
Dan, I'm sorry, if...
Go on, Frank.
Dan, I'm sorry if I may. Talking about that and Pochettino, I can regret one thing. Is when you see that Neymar is out after an hour, he's physically tired, everything. Why you don't take the decision to put him out? It's like Zidane yesterday with Marcelo. Marcelo being, well, nowhere near it, like for an hour. But Zidane made a substitution before putting Marcelo out. And it's the same for me. I know Neymar is a talent, is a star, whatever he is. But if he's dead, why do you want to keep him?
Yeah, but Frank, that's a big decision. We know from previous shows you hate Neymar. You've got an agenda against him and it's coming out again.
It's
very difficult, isn't it, to take off your star man in the biggest match of the season?
Well, again, we go back to the question, is he a babysitter or is he a coach, you know? And if he's a coach, he has the right to make a decision. If your best player is out of shape, he has to go out for the sake of the club, of the team, of the result. That's simple, as simple as that. And when I see Neymar being, you know, nowhere near it for 30 minutes, but still on the field, I'm wondering why Pochettino doesn't put him out.
But Jürgen, that's a difficult call to make, obviously.
It's a difficult one. Maybe you get forced into that moment and you make the decision. On the other side, you can certainly make a tactical change and you see that he's getting tired, then put him up front, you know, put him between the two center backs of Man City and leave him up there. You know, he doesn't need to run that much anymore. He keeps those two on their toes just with his simple presence. And Mbappé drops a little bit back and does more work. I think, you know, brilliantly in the first half, it worked so well with Di Maria kind of moving in and out of midfield and giving them support all the time. It is difficult in a game like this to obviously then to pull Neymar. It is also difficult because, you know, who are you going to bring in? You know, what is your alternative now on the bench? But this is definitely something that Frank is right. You know, you have to discuss that stuff with your assistant coaches being out there and then make a decision.
Away from Frank's anti-Neymar ways, Nadim, let's focus on that second goal from a professional perspective. How embarrassing is that for a wall to, well, crumble?
A wall? No, honestly, that type of stuff there, it's the bane of the lives of coaches, people who actually spend their careers trying to stop shots going in on goal. I think it's pathetic. And when you look at it come the next week, who's to say that might not be the most important moment in these two games? It's the type of stuff, as Jürgen said there, that should never be happening on that type of stage when the margins are so small between both teams. Like, even though Craig hates it, you look at the expected goal situation, and it's not like City had a ton of incredible chances. So to concede a goal like that, which is definitely preventable, it's not right. And the people who are in the wall, you know, they have to do ultimately a lot better, because it's nice when you go and score goals and all that stuff, but moments like that where you're essentially giving the opposition a goal, that's the stuff that makes your job just that much harder. So I know I don't need to say it myself, but ultimately that's the type of thing which is just unacceptable.
It's not the wall kind of summed up the second half for PSG. Yeah. It was just terrible. No blame for me on Navas for the goal from De Bruyne.
Right.
Personally, because I think it was you're betwixt and between. It's a rock and a hard place. The ball is so good from De Bruyne, as I think Jürgen said, some defenders got to deal with it. Once a defender doesn't deal with it, you got John Stones at the back post. If he gets a touch on it, so you can't go. I mean, Shaka's not here, could explain it better than me, but you can't really make a move as a goalkeeper. It's just one of those things. We've seen it before. But listen, it's frustrating as a player when you're playing against a team that eventually hit its stride like Man City and you can't get the ball. You can't get the ball back. And City were... If you look at City's passing from the first half to the second half, it was a little ragged, a little rushed in the first half. It was missing its target a lot and it was going straight back to a PSG defender or midfielder. In the second half, there was little triangles all over the place, and then they'd switch it out to Mahrez. You know, then they'd switch it out to Kyle Walker, and we started to see Kyle Walker bombing forward as well. They just tantalised PSG in the middle of the park in the second half. The passing was so much crisper. They always looked as if there was one or two extra blue shirts, light blue shirts. They never looked like that in the first half. They never looked like they had somebody to pass to. And it was a complete contrast. And before we come on, we heard a little bit of an interview with Guardiola, who said, "I just want us to be ourselves." Right. And we were not ourselves in the first half for whatever reason. But I was, you know, I was immensely impressed at a team not backs to the wall, but, you know, not playing at their best in one of their biggest moments, coming out, brushing themselves down.
Yeah.
And producing a performance like that that's now put them in the driving seat with two away goals. You can't criticise that.
A lot of talk of the failures of Pep Guardiola and Manchester City in the quarterfinals of the Champions League before the likes of Lyon, Liverpool, Spurs, Nadim. As Craig says, obviously this was a big statement from a side who've looked a little weak in Europe over past seasons. What's changed?
I think they've entered these final stages of the Champions League play in the last months, and they've played some of the best football that they've maybe played under Pep Guardiola. And the fact that they've won 90 to 95% of their matches leading up into these final stages, I think it gives you that sense of confidence. You know, there's no there's no doubt in terms of a formation. There's no doubt in terms of what people's roles are. They're playing with the play, seeing them not have a nine on the field is as regular as it comes now. So even though, as I say, it's something which isn't normal in terms of just general football, it's something which they're all very used to and they're very, very productive with. On the weekend, we just watched them win the League Cup final without a striker on the field, and they controlled games and stuff like that. So going into these matches, I feel like their game plan is more set. And whoever they come up against, you know, you're going to come up against really good sides at this point. But ultimately, I think City, they have confidence that it can beat absolutely anybody because they've spent most of the last 2-3 months beating everybody. But to talk about, to ask Craig a question in particular about the PSG second half, I wonder how much of their performance was to do with the fact that they had a 1-0 lead. So as a consequence, if you start to feel a bit of pressure, I feel like it's almost your natural tendency to take a step back. But against the City team, you talk about the flip side of that, being 1-0 down, the pressure was probably off for them, and they knew that they can do better. So before you know it, there's a whole cycle. It feels like there's a whole psychological shift in the game itself. Because as I say, for PSG, they're winning, they were doing everything fine, everything was great first half, but then a raise in performance and a slight more of an aggressive press from City, you know, all of a sudden it becomes easy to drop back. And looking at the players in PSG's side, you've got some exceptional attacking talent, some of the best in the world, but they're not necessarily the best players when a team's back's against the wall. So then you start to see a team kind of crumble because that backward step has happened. Like, do you think that's the thing, or am I just making that up?
No, I think a bit of both. I think a bit of sitting back in and a bit of pressure from Man City. But I, the one thing I would say is that they did okay with their backs against the wall against Bayern Munich. Well, I mean, they did and they didn't. I'm kind of contradicting myself here. Bayern had so many chances, in Munich. Maybe it was a little bit of luck as well and some poor finishing. But you're right. I mean, these players want to play on the front foot. And, you know, you're not going to get the best out of Di Maria, Mbappe and Neymar when your back's against the wall. Now, in all fairness, Mbappe did track back, and Neymar did. They tracked back as well as they could, but City just had the upper hand on them. Listen, I'm going to throw a little curveball in here because I think, you know, in the context of potentially getting to a Champions League final, Roy Keane in 1999, captain of Man United, in Turin, historic performance against Juventus, an amazing win, booked, missed the final. One of the biggest games of his career. One of the best players out there. Kevin De Bruyne, captain of Man City, the talisman. Really came to the fore in the second half. He's got a booking. We'll play in the second leg. No doubt about it, we'll play. That's a difficult call for him to go out in that field. As professional footballers, we know you can't go out there half-hearted, 80%. But if you make the one wrong decision or you don't make that challenge that's potentially going to stop an attack, you're on a yellow card, he misses the final. How difficult is that going to be for him to process that and still play at the level we know he can? Because I'm telling you, I'm telling you now, it's going to be in his mind, big time.
We'll talk about a lot more, I'm sure, looking ahead to the second leg. Jürgen, just going back to what we saw take place today, obviously a lot of talk around Manchester City, as I mentioned over the last few seasons, was that psychological barrier that they maybe had. They lacked that experience in the big, big European games. How much does that performance today in Paris change things?
Well, I think it will give them a huge boost of confidence. I mean, turning it around in the second half the way they did it, was impressive. And I can only imagine a little bit the halftime talk of Pep Guardiola telling them basically to step it up physically, to get in their faces, to not giving them any more time, and to face those physical battles, these one against one battles. And so they came out and they right away were physical. They kind of interrupted Paris. They showed them, okay, we are awake now. We are alert. We are here. We're in the game. And that kind of gained them the momentum. And the whole game went the other direction. And I think Paris Saint-Germain, in a certain way, they just thought about coming out of the locker room and saying, okay, you know, if we finish this thing 1-0, that would be amazing, going to Manchester with a win. This is how mental it is. It's all down to these little mental battles on the field. Certain fouls happen, certain moments. Obviously, as Craig said rightfully, so you got to be very aware of how bad a physical challenge is. You know, you cannot do it like Gaye did it with a straight red card. But here and there, you might be okay with picking up a straight yellow card for a physical challenge that kind of signals to your teammates that we're in the game and that we are now changing the rhythm and we get control. And Man City took control again in the second half, and Paris then started only to react to what Man City was doing. And those are all these little pieces that are so crucial in these type of huge battles. And they go all the way then into the final. And that's the kind of a process that a team goes through over a couple of years. And obviously Man City goes now, is growing under Guardiola so much over the last few years that maybe it culminates now in the final and with a possible Champions League win this year.
Frank?
Yeah, if I agreed before with what Jürgen said in the first, when we started, I don't agree with him on the confidence fact about Manchester City players, because they all know that that Paris Saint-Germain is better away from home in that competition that they were at home. They had a hard time against Barcelona at home. They had a hard time. They lost against Bayern Munich in a League One. It's the same thing. They lost against the best, the team who just are behind them. They scored four goals in Barcelona. They scored three goals in Munich. I don't think they're full of confidence, Manchester City, having seen Paris Saint-Germain killing them in the first half. And they know with the pace of Kylian Mbappe, it's going to be hard for them to cope with it. So I don't think they're confident. I think they are close to something, and they have the right, completely the right to think that. But I think Guardiola will aware them that Paris Saint-Germain can be a big trouble in the second leg, and it's far from being over.
So on that note, Frank, what percent chance do you give PSG of going through?
Well, I think it's still 50-50 for me.
Really?
They have to score two goals. Yeah, yeah, because they score, again, they score four goals in Barcelona, they score three in Bayern Munich. Well, Barcelona is not the same Barcelona, of course, but Bayern Munich was a favorite for me. I never expected to see Paris Saint-Germain scoring three goals, especially with the game they had in Bayern, but they scored three goals. And they can do again. So if they win 3-2 in Man City, they are in final. So everything is possible.
The one thing I would say, though, those games, Barcelona were absolutely atrocious at the back, and Bayern Munich made some horrendous decisions stepping out. I mean, Süle came out from a Neymar cross into the box. He was stepping out for offside along with the back line. He wasn't even looking at it. He was looking at the ground.
Yep. Yeah,
It was like when Marquinhos get in,
and they're all first legs as well. So you imagine it's still.
But you know, I think going back to Frank's point, to what Jürgen was saying, there's a difference in rhetoric here. There's a difference between confidence and arrogance. If I was a City player, I would be confident that I could get the job done, but I wouldn't be anywhere near arrogant enough to think it was done. And I think that's the difference. I think they've looked at PSG, they've seen almost the best of what PSG can throw at them early on. You know, they weathered it kind of in general, apart from a poor marking from a set piece, didn't play well in terms of their own game in the first half, and then showed to themselves that against the real elite teams in Europe, they can pass them off the park. So that's saying to me, from Man City's perspective, if they can do the basics in the second leg defensively, then they can dominate this PSG side. And I think the pendulum has swung to me something like 70-30, 60-40, 70-30. I think it's swung completely into Man City's hands, barring a very bad night at the office at the back.
Jürgen, what do you do if you're Pochettino now with your team between now and that second leg? How do you get them off the floor?
Well, you build on everything that happened in the first half, and also what Frank rightfully said, what they did in the last couple of months in their away games. I mean, they are very, very dangerous away from home. You know, you have Neymar, Mbappé, Di Maria. They can kill any team out there. So they have their chances also in the second second leg, and he will build on all the good pieces that he saw. He will definitely mention a couple of words on the two goals they conceded and on the fact that Man City took control in the second half. So there's a lot of stuff to be said to the team, and you know, they do their video sessions and probably also individual talks with every single player. They have everything to play for in the second leg and in both games, you know, the other one as well. And that's what's the beauty of the Champions League. The beauty of the Champions League, you know, is that one little mistake can kill you and destroy a whole campaign.
Nadim, City very much in the driving seat, no matter what Frank says. Looking at it overall, how much of a disaster would it be if they were to get knocked out now?
Oh, you're trying to drag me into this again, aren't you? For perspective, I think PSG are very capable of scoring two goals at the Etihad, but I also think that City are more than capable of winning that tie itself. So things are very much in their favour, and we looked at the odds. City are the favourites for it, so I wouldn't necessarily say it's 50-50, but, you know, it would be a big... I wouldn't say it's a big shock, but I think City are rightly favourites going into that second game, regardless of whatever the attack PSG have. Because, as I say, I think PSG will score goals, but I think they won't be able to stop City from scoring as well.
Well, if you'd like to see a Frenchman cry, be sure to download the latest edition of the Gavin Jules podcast.
How many podcasts do those two do?
They only do one.
We did a podcast on yesterday or the day before.
No, they do one on Monday, one on Thursday.
That's two.
Well, yes, but it's their show, isn't it? It's not like doing more. We're driven by the search for better, but when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/FC. Just go to Indeed.com/FC right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on the podcast. Indeed.com/FC, terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Did you know less than 10% of Americans own an e-bike? Here's why that should change. Studies show e-bike owners actually end up exercising more, plus getting outside more. If you're looking for a balanced lifestyle and everyday adventures, you need to check out Lectric e-bikes. They are the number one selling e-bike brand in America. Their bikes are typically foldable, pre-assembled, and have serious range up to 150 miles on some models. Check them out today at electricebikes.com and add some more adventure to your week. That's electricebikes.com.
The back of the English newspapers dominated by Chelsea's 1-1 draw against Real Madrid. We can pull this off. Yanks a lot. Meanwhile, the back page of the Star. In Spain, Marca going with a draw to keep dreaming. Meanwhile, Benzema is hope. It was an interesting game, wasn't it, in the Spanish capital. Dominated once again from a striker's perspective about Timo Werner's missed chances. Jürgen, Thomas Tuchel coming out afterwards and saying, you know, this is kind of life, that this is what's happening with him at the moment. How much trust have you within him, Jürgen, that he can find the back of the net once again, maybe soon?
I have total trust in him. Because he knows where to be in the right time, and right now, maybe here and there, he misses one in that specific moment. So that's something to deal with for a striker, and you have to kind of just think about the next opportunity that comes along. Like, you know, Michael Jordan said, so he missed more shots than he scored. And for Timo Werner, it's just like, you know, if you fail moments, it makes you only stronger. And the kid is good. The kid has a tremendous amount of drive and talent. And he knows where the ball will fall in the box. And he can also, you know, make things happen himself with his speed and going at people. So I totally have trust in Timo Werner. He will go through that stage. And who knows, maybe he scores in the next game. In the second leg, or he scores in the final of the Champions League. You know, he was very young when he was 21. Winning the Golden Boot at the Confederations Cup in Russia in 2017, and he scored, I don't know, almost 100 goals in the German Bundesliga already, and he's only 25. The kid is good, and the kid will prove it. But obviously, he has to deal with the criticism when you miss a big chance. That's just normal. Like goalkeepers do as well when they make a mistake. You know, they're all over them. But I hope that he gets plenty of opportunities going forward.
Meanwhile, Rio Ferdinand talking about the fact that Tammy Abraham wouldn't get the time that Timo Werner gets Nadim. Is that fair?
I would agree with that, but I don't necessarily know the reasoning for Rio to say that, because I think ultimately for Chelsea, when you look at someone like Timo Werner was somebody who was bought to come and play for the club and was bought for a significant expense. So you tend to find in football that you want to give your striker the opportunity to be able to prove their worth. Whereas for someone like Tammy Abraham, for as good as I believe that he is, he's somebody who's come through the academy. So until he's essentially prolific, he's not going to be seen in the same light as somebody like a Werner who as I say, has been brought into the club. If he doesn't work out for Werner, the plan isn't to maybe get rid of him at the end of the season. They want to see their investment pay off. So I don't think Tammy Abraham would get that. And it's a shame, because I think he's capable of doing, the similar things that, say, Werner's doing in terms of ending up in the right places and so on. And with a bit more confidence, I'd argue maybe would have scored more goals this year. But it's ultimately down to the manager. And with Tammy Abraham, you know, we're not even talking about him sometimes getting a game or not. There's sometimes when he's not even being in the squad. So I don't know exactly why that is, but what Rio Ferdinand has said, I think he's correct. But I think for Rio's real reasoning behind it, I'm not sure about. But for my own, I think it's purely because, as I say, Werner's cost a lot of money and they want to make sure that their investment pays off. So give them the opportunity.
Despite Werner's miss, Chelsea favourites to advance to the final. 1-1, of course, going into the second leg at Stamford Bridge next week. Jürgen, overall, were you surprised in the way that this match played out, Chelsea being so dominant?
I was very impressed by Chelsea, especially the first half. How they played it, how they created chances, you know, how they outplayed them sometimes, especially the first half an hour. I thought, you know, Christian Pulisic was terrific. Not only his goal was an absolute beauty, but also the way he has a presence in his game. He's constantly involved. You know, he moves from left to right to the middle. So he's a consistent danger. But obviously, it's not over yet. It's not over yet by any means, because Real Madrid is Real Madrid. And having then a guy like Benzema up front, you know, he can damage you in a split second in the second leg. So I think both semifinals are extremely exciting.
Meanwhile, Harry Kane was named Premier League Player of the Year at the London Football Awards, after he picked up the award, "I want to be winning the biggest prizes that there is to offer as a team, and we are not quite doing that." This is speculation, which is just going to continue to snowball, you feel, over the next few weeks about his future, Craig.
Well, there's two things here. I don't think he's been the best player in the Premier League this season. I'm sick to death of people like Jürgen and the striking union getting all these awards for scoring goals, and people I think the best player.
Okay, we're not talking about that.
Well, I was saying, I think the best player in the Premier League has been Ruben Dias this year.
But I don't know what the itinerary was for this award. Maybe you just had to play in London or Spurs or English.
Right, maybe, okay, sorry.
I don't know.
Well, look,
you had to be in a London team, apparently.
Well, was it?
Yes.
Oh, how boring is that?
Right, anyway, getting to the point.
Still give it to Ruben Dias.
Right.
Bloody strikers.
Harry Kane, should he leave? Where should he go?
Yes, he should leave. Well, look, it's very simplistic. Yes, he should leave. I think... I think he would have regret, possibly looking back in a career that could have been so much more. And I think we're starting to see that more and more from the little statements that are coming out from Harry Kane. You don't generally hear from him a lot, but when you do, it's usually something pertinent. And I think we're at a stage now, and I think he understands that he's at the age where it's kind of now or never. Mm. It's make or break. And I think from his perspective, I think it's time to go. And as I said the other week, and as I said at the weekend and Sunday after the cup final, and it's not because of the cup final or anything like that, it's a generalisation about where Tottenham are going and where they've been in the last 18 months to 2 years. And I think from his career perspective, try and make that move to one of the elite level clubs in Europe, because he will and can lead the line.
Jürgen, you cite the fact, obviously, when we've discussed this before, when you were at Spurs, you realised you had to move on. You had to go to Bayern Munich if you're going to win trophies. Mm. Does the fact that if Kane stays, does that show a lack of ambition from him?
No, by no means. No, if he stays, then he's committed to Spurs and he's really convinced to win trophies then with Spurs. You know, obviously, it's down to a lot of talks and negotiations there with Daniel Levy. With Spurs and what kind of a perspective they give to him, who's going to be the next manager at White Hart Lane, and many things, you know, to ask from his side. But as you said, I was in the same situation, but I was a couple of years older than he was. You know, I kind of ran out of time and I said, you know, I want to get a couple of more trophies, you know, in my cabinet. But it is a difficult decision for Harry, not an easy one. I think it's understandable if he would leave, but it's obviously the big hope of all Spurs supporters is that he stays.
Frank, I forgot you were here. What do you think?
What do I think? I think, and I already say that, unless Tottenham Hotspurs, you know, buy like 4 or 5 fantastic players to win the Champions League and the Premier League next season, he should go because, as Craig said, and I think everybody would agree, at the end of the day, what you want is silverware. And as Jürgen did, you know, when he went to Bayern and left Spurs, you know, you have to do that. I went to Chelsea. I didn't expect that the first year, but I went to Chelsea to get bigger and get some silverware. And it's because we're all competitors. We all want to do that. But just let me go back to Rio's Ferdinand comment and translate to Needham what Rio wanted to say. He wanted to say that as an Englishman, in talking to English media, it's better to see Tammy Abraham, an English player, and he tried to defend the English players, instead of defending a German player who has as a coach, a German coach. That's what he did. That's what he did. And he has a right to say that, because I agree with you, and I agree with Rio. I think Werner is very fortunate right now to have Tuchel as a coach, because I'm not sure he would have stayed. But don't forget as well that he had a very good beginning of the season, Werner. And when Averst was nowhere near it and Ziyech injured, we were fortunate to have Werner. So you shouldn't forget that.
I think Frank's just having to go at Germans player. Again. That's
do you know, if, do you know look, I don't want to go.
Neymar, I hate the German, I hate everybody for you.
I don't want to go over this point. I don't want to dwell on this point, but I think he's getting the time because of the body of work that he's done in Germany, and yeah. Obviously he's in a German international footballer, so there's some sort of trust there. To go back to Harry Kane, looking at certain clubs, one club in particular that needs to make the big step, the next step, is Manchester United in England, right? They have the clout, they have, I don't know, I'd imagine they have the money, maybe they don't want to spend the money. They have the strength behind them to go and make these marquee signings. If I was Manchester United, I would go out there and I was trying desperately, like they are, to claw back Man City and Liverpool. And it'll probably be that again next year when Van Dijk and Gomez and all these players are fit. Cavani's probably not going to be there. Even if he does, he's 33 or 34. I would go and get myself somebody like Harry Kane, who's going to guarantee me 25 to 35 goals a season in that kind of side. And that could be the difference for them. Even if they don't have as good a squad as City and Liverpool, that quality up front could be the difference of putting pressure on the teams at the top. And that's what, if I was Manchester United, that's what I would go and do. Obviously, they tried to get Erling Haaland a year or so ago and he went to Dortmund. I don't know if they've got some agreement that maybe he'll go there or not, because that's a similar scenario. But that kind of player for them, that's what they need, or they will not bridge that gap.
Jürgen, before you go, I've got to ask you about the managerial merry-go-round that seems to continue in the Bundesliga on a daily basis at the moment. Julian Nagelsmann, of course, making that switch to Bayern Munich. Reports suggesting that it will be American coach Jesse Marsch coming in to replace him at Leipzig. Do you like this move?
Oh, I would love that move. I mean, for Jesse Marsch, obviously coming from the Red Bull organization in New York and then, you know, the last couple of years with Salzburg, he's done a tremendous job. He's done a great job there. And if he gets the opportunity to move on basically to Leipzig, and it's kind of within the family, obviously goes Salzburg to Leipzig. Salzburg is the probably biggest feeder team for RB Leipzig. That would be a fantastic move.
Leipzig are in action, of course, in the German Cup this weekend. There are feature matches that you can see on ESPN News on Friday. Leipzig in action against Werder Bremen. And then on Saturday, 24 hours later, it's Borussia Dortmund against Holstein Kiel.
Passion, drive and patience. The formula for winning championships is also what keeps your ride or die alive. eBay Motors has everything you need to maintain your vehicle and level it up to peak performance. Superchargers, roof racks, exhaust kits, LED headlights and more. Whether you're into speed, power or style, eBay Motors has you covered. With over 122 million parts for your number one ride or die, you'll always find exactly what you're looking for. And with eBay Guaranteed Fit, your part is guaranteed to fit your ride every time or your money back. Because with eBay Motors, you're burning rubber, not cash. With all the parts you need at the prices you want, it's easy to make your car the MVP and bring home huge wins. Keep your ride or die alive at ebaymotors.com. Eligible items only. Exclusions apply.
10 seconds on the clock. How many things can you name that are always growing? Your relationships. Your skills. Your customer base. How about businesses on Shopify? Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage, to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/network, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/network now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/network.
Thursday's all about the first leg of the semi-finals of the Europa League. We'll see Villarreal take on Arsenal and Manchester United against Roma. Manchester United favourites to advance, but Roma fans gave their team a nice send-off before they headed to England ahead of Thursday's clash. Thousands lining the streets to wish them well. Well, they're going to have their work cut out, aren't they? Roma 12-5 to advance to the final. No surprise that Ole Gunnar Solskjaer's side favourite to make it through. Meanwhile, closer, isn't it? The other one, Villarreal against Arsenal. Arsenal, no favourites, 17-8 on the La Liga side. Villarreal, little outsiders at 6-5. And of course, we'll be discussing both of those games on the next edition of ESPN FC. Be sure to join us. Manchester City dominating the back pages in England on Thursday. Sacre bleu, magnifique, says the Independent, of course, saluting Manchester City's comeback against PSG. Rallye les bleus. Like my French accent, okay?
No, it's a bit like you're German. You try to say Leipzig, it really annoys me.
Oh, really? Leipzig? That's it. Be sure to stay tuned. Extra Time is next, where we talk a lot about Wolves. Welcome into the latest edition of Extra Time. Thank you for your tweets. Craig Burley with me in the studio. Frank LaBeouf joins us as well, as does Nadim Anua. How did you describe Nadim's background, Craig, when we saw it?
Ready for a passport photo.
Either he can't hear us or he's staring us down. Oh, there it is.
He's given the passport stance where you're not allowed to...
Can't smile.
Can't smile, no. Which I don't have a problem with.
No, yes, I know you're very good at that. No smile, just that's it. Perfect.
You get your army haircut.
Beautiful, lovely, ready
what
to
go.
What
do you do when you go to the barbers? Is that what you ask for?
Yes, so it's exactly what I asked.
Get me an army
please,
haircut.
Please, because I never made it into the army.
You were never getting in the army, you.
Oh, I don't know, I think I'd make a great soldier.
Soldier?
Right, let's get on with this. Should Guardiola have made aggressive substitutions to put the tie away after the red card, Nadim?
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think ultimately they were controlling the game and they could have scored with the players that were out on the field already. And as far as City go, you talk about aggressive, but what is aggressive to them? Because we see them regularly play without a number nine and they still manage to win games. And sometimes they win games convincingly. So for me, no, I think he made the right decision and in Pep we trust.
I didn't realise we were still in that camera box here and I was having a good old yawn.
Not at Nadim's answer.
No, and the fact I was up at 4 o'clock this morning.
Oh, there you go. Did you ever score an accidental goal, Craig, in a match similar to De Bruyne?
Oh, an accidental goal? Oh, yes. Sorry, I thought it meant an own goal.
No.
No. No.
No?
No, no.
Frank, did you ever score an accidental goal like De Bruyne?
No.
No?
Never.
Nadim, did you ever score a goal?
Sorry about that.
Yeah, I scored one or two, yeah. But there was one in particular. The goal wasn't accidental, but the way I ran him was. So I tried to play a ball to Adebayor, I think it was. And it was probably the worst pass of my career. It was so bad that I ran onto it myself and then scored on a one-on-one.
Oh, beautiful.
So yeah, it was an accidental goal, but it was an accidental assist, yeah. It wasn't great.
Was Ronaldo the coach for PSG's wall? Frank, what would you make of that if that was your teammate in the wall doing that?
Well, I don't know. I was told that a wall is a wall and the wall doesn't move. So now we can see the wall jumping with somebody laying down, you know, behind the wall. Okay, fine for that. But we saw the wall of Juventus, I think, some time ago.
Yeah,
and now we saw that fantastic Paris Saint-Germain wall. Well, you know, I've got some Portuguese friends and they're not very happy with the wall that we see so far. That's what I'm saying.
No. Would you be in the wall? What would your position be?
Yeah.
I was in the wall.
Yeah.
The taller you are, from memory, you tend to be more towards the outside.
Okay.
And I'm not. Relatively tall.
We're seeing it kind of evolved from what you protected when you were in the wall. Because now it's your face and before it was other areas.
No, I don't think that's changed.
No, definitely. People cover...
Yes, but it's an instinctive movement.
What do you mean?
Because you're protecting a certain area. Where are you trying to go with this?
No, I'm just interested because when we were growing up, you think of a wall and everyone's in a line and everyone is protecting everybody.
Right, you're trying to get me in trouble.
I'm not trying... No, I think this is a fine conversation.
You're protecting a lower part of the body.
Yes.
Still. And now you'll see players raising their hands.
But they're in their starting position is this.
No, it's not.
Yes, it is.
Is it?
Yeah.
Okay. Well, I'm still covering the important area.
Nadim, where did you cover when you're in the wall?
I just covered the goal. That was it. If the ball was coming near me, I'm going to try and head it, kick it, chest it, whatever. Like, that's the big difference, really.
Right. And Frank, when you're in the wall?
While I was in the wall, I was putting my boss hands in the area you're talking.
Right.
Because he didn't care about getting the ball in the face.
No.
You know, which is not the case for the area you're talking about.
Sure.
But I wasn't in the wall most of the time because I was making sure that if the ball was going through and the goalkeeper was getting it,
right.
I was there to protect the goalkeeper.
Okay.
Because strikers don't think about that.
Listen, you don't get looks like Frank and I by protecting your face.
Well, you had nothing to protect because you had no teeth anyway, so what was left, really?
Well, that is true, but there are still other parts.
I don't know.
There are still other very important parts of the... obviously, the teeth were less of a concern because most of them were in my pocket in the dressing room, so that wasn't a problem. But it's not nice being in the wall sometimes, listen, we laugh at it, but... And I remember people like Stuart Pearce and others who didn't had no interest in curling the ball over the top. It was coming at you through the laces, and it, either you were getting out of the way or and so it was like, oh no,
right?
What do you do? Because I can't go back into the dressing room and have turned my back. So
sure.
you close your eyes. It's hard. It's not easy, you know. It's not easy, but somebody's got to do it.
Oh.
You wouldn't do it, you're a coward.
No, I definitely wouldn't do
Frankie
it.
Howell.
I'm too short as well.
Yeah,
what's the point of having me in a wall?
I'd put you in it, it's just
ridiculous. Nadim?
Yeah, I was going to say, for me, in my last spell of RSL, I had two jobs. The first one was to come in when there was a five-man wall. So I was like special teams when it came to walls.
Oh, man.
But then the other one was like when he got to a certain place, I would be I wouldn't be the guy that line up, I'd be the guy on the inside. So I knew if the ball went over my head, it was probably going to be a goal.
Right.
So when it's like that, you don't really have a chance to be able to turn sideways. You just have to take it in the face, and I think the guys will agree here. You're not really a centre-back till you've got cuts all over your head, and as you can see, I might also have one or two. Oh. So I guess that means I had a good career.
Yeah, I had a career. Right. Should top-level clubs...
Listen, more than yours, my friend.
Yeah, there it is. Yep, good. What have you ever done, Thomas?
Yeah.
Should top-level clubs be hiring wall coaches instead of throwing coaches based on the recent problems we've seen from big clubs?
Don't say it's a valid point.
Who decides who's in the wall? Who makes that decision?
This is way too much conversation about a wall.
No, but it's interesting.
A wall is generally a wall is generally what a goalkeeper wants.
So, but who decides who's in it?
The coach.
You go through it on a Friday, yeah. Right?
But then it depends. Then how many the keeper wants in the wall?
Okay.
The keeper generally will decide. If it's a 3-4-5 man wall,
okay,
depending on the area,
right.
And then you take who you're designated to be in the wall or not at that point. So the three biggest will be in.
That'd be your three tallest players,
probably.
Okay,
right? And somebody will line up.
Yeah, but you have you also have the leader of the wall who talks to the goalkeeper to line up with the post. And then he turns and then you add players next to him, left or right, depending where the ball is. And you have the coach who names them. And you have the fierce one, like Nedim was.
Yes.
And you have the guy, the flying guy as well, who is the kind of kamikaze as well.
Yeah.
Who could go out.
To close it down.
Or indirect free kick. Yeah.
Give this in layman terms, right? So, right, you got a four-man wall, right?
Yes. Yeah.
You get the four people that are designated to get in it,
right?
One of those players with the goalkeeper will line the wall up.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. Okay. That's job A.
Right.
Unless the keeper and him have ballsed it up, right. That's job A done.
Okay. Right?
Then the guy goes to take the free kick. The wall can't do a bad job unless people jump out the way.
Right.
It's not difficult.
Yeah.
So it's perfectly simplistic. Line it up properly.
Right.
Stand where you're supposed to stand. And if somebody...
Yes, we know all this. I'm just interested in the dynamics that build the wall.
Jesus Christ, man, I've just told you.
I know, but you've told me nothing that I didn't know already.
But that's because there's nothing to know.
But it is. Like, who goes in the wall? I'm intrigued by that.
I just told you the three tallest players.
I know, but then you went back and just did like a boring explanation for no reason.
Yes, that's because you're absolutely clueless.
Nathan, what about the wall in front of the wall?
Don't ask any more questions. You're really getting on my nerves.
No, the person is you know when you've got the free kick taker, he's then got the wall in front
somebody
of the wall.
Listen, just fade this to black because he's really annoying.
I'm interested.
The fade is off here now. He's interested in a freaking wall.
I am.
I've just told you about the wall. Freaking easy.
Come on, call a builder and he will explain to you how to build a wall.
Okay, next question, away from walls.
Craig is full this morning and he wants an explanation.
Who are you talking to?
I'm thinking of going and standing over there and showing you what a wall is.
Craig, which one is more emphasised in training sessions? Scoring from a set piece or defending a set piece?
Defending.
And how often does that happen in training sessions?
Coach dependent.
Right.
Sometimes not a lot, and sometimes with certain coaches, a lot of what we'd call drills. You know, corner kick, set pieces, zonal marking, not zonal marking, men on the post, one man on the post, two men, you know, one in each post, different coaches, different scenarios. I think that's more... you work on your little fancy attacking free kicks and a little flick over the wall or whatever it is, some sort of run, but the defensive aspect... In my opinion, the defensive aspect is more important to get correct because the attacking one can be more off the cuff. The defensive one can't be. It has to be. Everyone has to know their job.
So then how much work is actually done on offensive set pieces or how much is that just done after training amongst like a group of players?
Yeah, generally, yes.
So it wouldn't be like a part of the coaching.
No, the defensive setup could be everybody and usually would be because everybody's got a job to do. Particularly if you have everybody back and somebody's on the edge of the box. you know, who's picking up who and where and who's marking the front post. Attacking set pieces will be different. You know, when Frank and I were at Chelsea, we let guys like Viale and Zola and all these guys get on with it, and they would have ideas about what they wanted to do, and that's what they did. But the defensive, I think the defensive aspect is way more important than in terms of the organisation.
Frank, is Marquinhos a top five centre-back in the world? I feel like he's criminally underrated and should be talked about more.
Oh, definitely. And he's maybe, if he's not the first, the second best defender in the world. He proved it for many years with the national team and with Paris Saint-Germain. And everybody loves him in Paris. You can be some question mark about Neymar, even Thiago Silva, with the time he stayed for Paris Saint-Germain, but never there were any question marks about Marquinhos. Marquinhos did the job. He even played midfielder when Tuchel needed him. The guy is absolutely exceptional. He's a real warrior, and I'm very fond of him. Very fond.
Nathan, should German refs teach English refs how to actually ref? That's a lot of refs.
No, I don't think so. I don't think so. I think ultimately, if we can just call it what it is, I think all refs are terrible. So okay. That pretty much answers that question.
Okay, lovely. Craig, how many times have you put in a tackle similar to Gaze today on an opponent? I reckon a few times at least.
I'd say, but a few years ago, you were getting away with them a bit more.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So what you would get away with in the 90s and early 2000s, you're not getting away with now. Anyway, actually, some of them were a bit late, a bit clumsy, a bit reckless, but that was a real bad one today. Pretty obvious one, actually.
Yeah, Gundogan in the end, okay. Final question.
Yep.
Nadim, did you ever fake injury to waste time? Does coaching staff encourage that sort of act?
Well, I've seen people that do it, but as a defender, I could never really do it because the fact is, if you faked it and somebody came on, you had to leave the field. So defensively, you were putting your team at risk. So I have seen lots of people do it, but they tended to be number nines and tens and things like that. But for me, no, I would never fake an injury. No chance at all. No way.
Frank, is this where your acting started?
No, it's when I watch Italian players doing it that I learned how to act and to pretend. But that's true that I saw many players. I played, I always say, with all due respect, with Pierluigi Casiraghi, played with me for a short time at Chelsea, and I played against him in when I played against Italy, where somehow we played in the Parc des Princes. He was a yard, even more than a yard away from me, and he controlled with the chest, but look at the referee to see if he was in the line. We couldn't see the space between him and me, and fell, and the ref gave a free kick. And I swear to God, I applauded Pierluigi, and I say, well done. That's absolutely fantastic. Well done.
I was a yard away from him.
When was it said, Frank said there was...
Of course.
Was it too many German managers?
Careful.
Too many German managers, or was it too many Italian managers?
Too many Italian managers.
Actually, he's anti-Italian again.
He hates Serie A, he hates Italians. Like, if he was to rank the top five European leagues, he'd have Serie A fifth.
Yeah. No, make it shorter. I hate everybody.
Oh, there
you
go.
If I listen to you, so there we go. We're good. No, I love the Scottish. I love the Scottish.
Yeah, he loves the Scottish.
Yeah.
Really?
And Luxembourg.
Okay.
Yeah.
That's it. That brings any more wall questions? Any more walls?
If you ask about the setup of a wall again in this studio, I will not be responsible. But tell me a bit more about how it's set up.
It's interesting.
That's a bit like,
it's interesting, isn't it?
That's a bit like asking, you know, why does a bike on two wheels fall over? You know what I mean? Because it does.
Well, but then, you know, the physics of it, why? And why does it go in a straight line when you've got it balanced right? That's it.
Okay, can I go?
Wait, guys. Au revoir.
We'll be back. Craig, you're off tomorrow. We'll FaceTime you and talk about Wolves.
Hopefully you are.
Europa League.